Hello, everyone. This is your host, Esperanza Ray. Welcome to New Consciousness, New World. Hope you had a wonderful, joyful, and very thankful Thanksgiving. I enjoyed mine, definitely. I wanted to introduce to you our guest speaker who was with us last week, Charlie Campbell. Charlie, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Esperanza.
Well, great. How was your Thanksgiving?
Well, my Thanksgiving was with my family and in-laws. My mom, who's 84 years old, went up to the country where my sister-in-law lives and had a nice celebration. It's dark early and ended early. It was going to be more like a seniors event. We were all finished after we started at 2 p.m. By about 6, and all the football fans were looking for the game, and those of us that had plenty to eat were looking for a comfortable chair.
Yeah, that's right. We definitely had plenty to eat. I mean, sometimes we had ours at my brother's house, and which is only a couple of minutes from here. You can actually walk to his house. But the interesting part is I sometimes wonder if he knows how to ration the amount of food, because there was leftovers for him, and he even gave us leftovers, and we had them for a couple of days, and he had them for the rest of the week. So that just goes to show you the amount of food. Ours was not the traditional turkey, though, since, you know, my family's originally from Spain. Most of our dishes had to do with very traditional Spanish dishes, because it is through the holidays that we get to make these things and not, you know, every day necessarily. So we had octopus, and we had pig's feet, and we had another famous dish, which is callos, which is made out of chickpeas, and that's one of my favorites. So, and then of course this traditional Spanish omelet, which I like very much. And the only thing missing was my favorite dessert, which was flan. You know, my mom makes it with 24 eggs, and it's very powerful. Hopefully she'll make it for Christmas, but she definitely did not make it for Thanksgiving. Although I have to say, dessert was not missing. We had some really good desserts as well. Yeah, it was a good Christmas. I controlled myself, so I didn't eat too much. How about you?
Well, I felt that I was full, but not to the point where, you know, I was ready to take a nap immediately because of the tryptophan in the turkey.
Yeah.
And when you talk about flan, I have a friend who at work whose husband is a chef at a chain. Well, I don't know if it's a chain or not, but it's called the Bonefish Grill. And they're from Puerto Rico, and he makes some wonderful flan.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Maybe I should invite him over for the holidays.
Yes. They've recently started the vegan lifestyle, which I think flan might be out, you know, for that one, but you can still
true.
Make it for the rest.
True. It does contain eggs, so that would be, if you're completely vegan, yeah, that would definitely be an issue. Yeah. But, you know, there's ways, I guess, you could make it without the yolk and just make it with with an egg substitute, which they do have for vegans, but I guess it makes it a little more difficult and challenging, right?
I would say so.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to briefly just share with our audience the phone numbers that if they'd like to call in to us to ask questions in regards to the show for today. We're going to continue our conversation from last week about Native Americans and, you know, basically the ascension process in 2011. But we're also going to share something about shapeshifting. We'll actually be talking about a meditation where it's from a book, Animals Speak, and the author, Charlie, is Andrew.
Ted Andrews.
I'm sorry?
Ted Andrews.
Yes, Ted Andrews. And so we'll be sharing that meditation from you. And he does have a wonderful book on the different animals and what each one represents. So if that's a topic of interest to you guys, then that's something you can go ahead and purchase or get even from your library. So these are the numbers that you can call in. You have a toll-free number, which is 888-627-6008. 6008. And then there's two additional numbers, which are local numbers. They're 530-327-7602. And then the second line is 530-413-4522. If for whatever reason you don't recall the numbers, you're welcome to go on BBS Radio, Station 1, and then obviously today's show comes up in Station 1 as the show that's on live, and it'll show you the different numbers that you can call in for any questions after the meditation. You'll have about 10 minutes to call in if you'd like, and if not, we'll just continue with the conversation and topic at hand. So let's go ahead, Charlie, and talk a little bit. I know that we had discussed briefly the Native Americans, and we talked about prophecies, and we also talked about prophesizing in relation to the what was going to happen with 2012. And for example, I understand that there are some prophecies and predictions about 2012, Native American prophecies. For example, the American Indians have come from a variety of tribes, so they have different languages and different customs and even social chain and differences. So it's very interesting. But one of the most fascinating set of prophecies comes from the Hopi Nation located in the southwestern part of the United States. I believe it's in Arizona. Many prophecies foretold by the Hopi appear to have come true. So I guess this is one of the reason why a lot of people are looking to the Hopi. And also, I think because the Hopi were peaceful, and the word Hopi means hopeful. So I like the Hopi because, my name Esperanza means hope. So I have a special interest in their organization, their tribe. But I wanted to share with the listeners and with you, Charlie, as well, this prophecy, which I thought was very interesting by the Hopi. And they talk about different signs which will take place before 2012 or before the end of time. Now, that's the way I understand it. I understand it's the end of time. It's not really the end of the world. Is that how you understand it as well?
Yes, it's more like the end of the old processes that are no longer working for humanity, and a spiritual resurgence of sorts.
Okay, so the fourth world shall end soon, and the fifth world will begin. And my understanding from this is that the fourth world is referring to the fourth dimension that we're existently living in or currently living in, and we'll transition over to the fifth dimension, which is fairly close by. Of course, usually when you transition from one world to the other, there's usually some chaos in between because it's like moving. You're taking your stuff, you're packing everything up, and then you're basically taking everything out of every place. You have this humongous mess which you have to pack up and then unpack and then reorganize. So right now, I think we're going through all the negativity that exists within ourselves. We are eliminating it, and in as a result of that, we will all transition into the new world, which is the fifth dimension. But let's see what the Hopi say. They say that the elders, this is the something. In other words, the fourth world shall end soon, and the fifth world will begin. This is what the elders knew. Everyone did. The signs over many years have been fulfilled, and so few are left. So these are the signs that they're talking about. This is the first sign. We are told of the coming of the white-skinned man like Pahana, but not living like Pahana men, who took the land that was not theirs, and men who struck their enemies with thunder. Of course, this is the coming of the white man and the European man to the new continent. So that has definitely happened. This is the second sign. Our lands will see the coming of spinning wheels filled with voices. In his youth, my father saw his prophecy come true with his eyes, the white man bringing their families in wagons across the prairie. So, second prophecy also fulfilled. Now, the third prophecy, or the third sign, a strange beast like a buffalo, but with great long horns, will overrun the land large numbers. These white feathers saw with his eyes coming of the white man's cattle, the longhorn, obviously. And then in the fourth sign, the land will be crossed by snakes of iron. To me, this is referring probably to the train, which makes sense because it's an iron machine. And then the fifth sign is the land shall be crisscrossed by a giant spider's web. I'm not sure what that one means because I thought maybe it was referring to the roads. But the sixth prophecy, or the sixth sign, says the land shall be crisscrossed with rivers of stone that make pictures in the sun, that shine in the sun. So that to me would be the, you know, our roads of today. And then the seventh sign, you will hear of the sea turning black and many living things dying because of it. Well, to me that would sound like petroleum leaks on the ocean or the darkening of the ocean as a result of pollution. And of course, we have had cases where the fish have died as a result of that. And not only that, but even birds have fallen from the sky because of the pollution in the air at given times. Okay. So that was the seventh sign. And the eighth sign, you will see many youth who wear their hair long like people, coming join the tribal nations to learn their ways and wisdom. Now that one, I'm not sure that that has happened yet, although there is, I think, more interest for living in the land of American way, living off the land. But have you heard of anything of people going to the tribes to learn their ways?
Well, part of that sounds like the 60s, you know, during the war era.
The hippie movement and living in communes and stuff like that. Okay, well, that sounds interesting. That's a good point. Okay, and then that was the eighth. And then in this is the ninth and last sign. You will hear of dwelling places in the heavens above the earth that shall fall with a great crash. It will appear as a blue star. Very soon after this, the ceremonies of my people will cease. I thought that was very interesting. Either it's referring to a spaceship or some kind of meteorite that looks blue from our from our planet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this one I don't think has been fulfilled yet. So these are. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Charlie.
It doesn't sound like it from the standpoint of there hasn't been any large meteorite strikes in a long time.
Yeah. Well, it does say that it's a dwelling place in the heavens. So unless they're referring to the space shuttle or the, what are they creating out there in space? They're creating a lab.
Another sky lab?
Yeah, a sky lab.
Space station?
Yeah. It could either be that, which would fall and crash, or it could be a spaceship of some sort. Right, so
yeah, that one's up for grabs yet.
I guess so. Okay, and there are signs that great destruction is coming. The world shall rock and to and fro. The white man will battle against other people in other lands. Of course, world war with those. I mean, we kind of have already had two world wars, so that's nothing new to that. Point. With those who possess the first light of wisdom, there will be many columns of smoke and fire, such as white feather has seen in the white man makes in the desert not far from here. Only those which come will cause disease and great dying. Overall, the theme of the Hopi prophecy is that the earth is going to soon go through a great purification, and that humanity can make the decision as to how extreme this purification will be. Their belief is that the world goes through a period of destruction and renewal, and that we are about to enter into a new age, the fifth world, or sixth, depending on the source, you know, depending on the cultural or maybe a different tribe even. But I thought that was very interesting. Of course, I'm sure there's other prophecies from other tribes as well. But that was very interesting. Now, one of the things that that I wanted to touch upon. This has to do with, obviously, shape-shifting, which is, I mean, I'm sorry, this has to do with, you know, them understanding what transformation we're going to be going through. And what I love about the Native Americans is the connection that they have with the elements and how they live in perfect harmony, and, you know, how we need to return to that in order for our transformation to also take place. Would you agree with that statement?
I would, because there's in order to make a shift of that magnitude, you know, all of your vibration levels have to increase. It's written in many places, you know, through the New Age work, and that in order to, you know, go to through an ascension process, which the Earth is essentially going through, is it'll require, you know, a higher vibratory rate for everyone's physical body, and you know that you have to, you know, work with that and, you know, raise your vibrations, you know, through healing work, meditation, you know, wherever you are drawn to.
Yeah. Their connection with nature was such that the more enlightened or gifted shamans were able to connect to spirit and also perform shape-shifting. As a matter of fact, the Native Americans believed in two types of shape-shifting, and also for the purpose of developing wisdom and understanding the world around them, they were able to shape-shift. And my understanding is, correct me if I'm wrong, there was two types of shape shifting, and that is mental or physical. Of oneself. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm familiar with, you know, the talk about the physical shape shifting, where they would shift into a form of animals. There's the jaguar shamans in the Amazon, and then there's also on the, they refer to it as negative side, you know, in the Southwest is the skinwalkers, who are,
yes,
you know, that's known in the Navajo and Hopi reservations.
Yeah, but those were a little more dramatic, and while we'll touch on it briefly, the skinwalkers tried to use the skin of the animal to connect. I think and that's part of some of the negative side and the dark side of shape-shifting, which could, in a way, relates, I think, to what most people understand in our world, you know, not in the Native American world, but I think as regular people, we tend to believe from the dark aspect side to appear as, you know, we think of them as werewolves and bats like Dracula. And between red man and the white man, there's a vast difference in the point of view, where there's a larger tendency to the negative side of shape-shifting, like possession or even transforming into some kind of demon, is the, I think, more from a perspective of European white culture, as opposed to Native American culture, where shape-shifting was more mysterious, elusive, it challenged, and it was a phenomenon that occurred through all tribes in America. But their purpose was used in song and dance and hunting and for healing and warfare. They weren't using it so much from the negative, destructive way. Would you agree with that, or like to expand upon?
Yes, I would. There's polarity on both sides, you know, of all issues, the positive and the negative.
Mm-hmm. The yin and the yang.
Yeah.
I think that if from the perspective, though, of Native American, the shape-shifting goes more into the soul aspect of connecting your spirit to this spiritual animal. Now, you say that you're familiar with the actual shamans that were able to perform shape-shifting at the physical level, not just at the mental level, right?
I've heard, you know, stories of folks that I've run across, you know, that were in different, you know, ceremonies, and you know, they experienced, you know, shape shifting from the very advanced and adept shamans. But it's not something that you know, very few people have experienced, and it's more of myth and legend.
Yes. Yeah. I when I ref what well, that's not what we're going to be doing with our meditation, though. We're not going to be shape shifting physically. We're going to be more at a mental level, connecting with the essence. And basically what we're going to be doing is tapping in to the essence of the man animal that is connected to us based on our personality. Correct, Charlie?
Yes.
Okay. So, from the perspective of the purpose, I guess the Native Americans used it, and from the purpose of this book, Animals Speak, in the dance, you know, Indians used to wear the animal garments or animal guardian, and they would dance, and they would move in the shape of the in the form of the animal that they represented, for example, eagle, wolf, bear, whichever one of these was connected or they were trying to connect at this point. A lot of Native Americans I noticed connect a lot with the bear and the wolf, from stories that I've heard. And the purpose of the tribes connecting, or at least the shamans, used the shape shifting in a very serious manner. It wasn't intended for games or for just for fun, but wearing the feathers and the hide of this, the guardian spirit that they considered their totem animal, would help them to perform animal actions, like, for example, dolphins for healing powers. So that would be one of them. Although I have to, I understand too that the eagle also has healing powers to some extent. And oftentimes these healing energies that they use through the shape-shifting of animals could mean the difference between life and death of a person. And of course, some people also use these animals by killing an animal that represented a shaman's or another person's totem animal in the hopes that they would kill the person. But that's, I guess, on the dark side. So we won't go too much into that, but that's not what we're going to be doing today. The purpose is to connect with the strengths within and associate them with an animal so that we can better understand our strengths and weakness from that perspective. In a way, it's similar to I guess our astrological signs, where we can understand our personality based on our zodiac sign, based on the date we were born and the stars that were in the heavens and how they impact our personality and our belief system and our person. And my understanding too is the shape-shifting had a role in hunting, where a lot of the Native Americans used this because it helped them to hone in on, you know, hone their skills to be able to, one, understand the animals they were hunting, and two, to act as hunters, take on the roles of some. Let's say, for example, the wolf would be a hunter, the bear would be another hunter, or an eagle would be a hunter as well. So they would take on the characteristics to help them hone in what they were going to be doing in the hunt, and make their hunting easier and more connected to what they were going to be doing, and facilitate that process. So it's kind of, it all has a very complex thing behind. And of course, it allowed them to absorb, because they lived in nature and they were able to observe how these animals interacted, and to try to mimic and imitate their behavior so that they too could take a hold of that energy and that strength, I think, was part of it. Anything else that you'd like to add specifically about the shape-shifting?
No, it's a subject that one cannot, you know, discuss, you know, in an hour or two sometimes. And, you can read lots about it, but you know, I think in the, you know, when we go through different meditations, you know, we are shifting in you know, ways that you know, would, you know, benefit us, you know, by spiritually shifting, you know, our perspective. And that's, you know, one of the hallmarks of a good meditation is when you come back and you feel like you've been somewhere and that, you know, you've accomplished something. And then you just, you know, go from there to your next experience.
Right. Yeah. In some of the dances, I think they use the rituals of the animals during certain dances, and sometimes I think in some cases humans began to act and mimic the animals that they were dancing as, although outwardly their appearance did not change, and this is what would be considered a mental shape-shifting as opposed to the physical, where the actual body is actually transformed into the animal. Again, that is for very gifted and talented shape-shifters, of course. And these types of dances, I guess, were not intended to be harmful as long as they were done within a specific sacred circle. Inwardly, the individual kind of melds with the animal, and the human senses of smell, sight may be heightened. There would be increased dexterity in the limbs, or a feeling of savage power that the animal may represent, which gives strength and sometimes encourage, especially if you're going out to battle. So depending on the animal, for food or for warmth, primitive man knew that this was destiny was, you know, basically connected to the animal, to the beasts, what we labeled beasts. Sometimes you kind of have to wonder. And trying to mimic was the animals was a way of survival. I mean, you have even the ancient Egyptians who revered some of the animals and had many gods with animal-shaped heads. But let's talk a little bit more about the perspective from our book and what exactly it means to shapeshift from the book Animals Speak. Charlie, if you could share that.
Well, basically the meditation, and you know, if we have time, we'll go through that this evening, is that you're shifting your perspective, putting your conscious mind aside, and you're going into the meditative state, and then you'll be accessing your subconscious mind, which has, you know, all the answers, you know, to many things, and it takes a while to be able to access them, and it's, I find it's easier at times when someone's guiding you, you know, to achieve, you know, a certain result than it is to just you know, meditate on your own. Most of the time, if you're go deep enough, you'll just sort of doze off. But you know, that's fine too.
Yeah. Okay. So, would you like to go ahead and we can begin now the meditation for shape shifting? Now, remember, this will not be transforming you at a physical level. That's not our intent. That would be a little bit dangerous, but what it is basically we are connecting with the animal, totem animal that is associated with your person. And I believe that there's up to three totems that could come up when you do this exercise.
Yes,
is that
it
correct?
Can be. It
okay.
Depends on, you know, what the spiritual message is, you know, for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
You know, what we'll be going through is I've done it on numerous occasions to just you know, read the script right out of the book, animal speak, and you know, people have gotten a message quite often, you know, during and at the end of the meditation, and others might have to wait a little while, and it'll come in the dream time, or, you know, you get a flash of insight, and, you know, that's how it works. There's no right or wrong way. You just have to relax and, you know, be open to it. If you're open to it, then, you know, the results will come.
Now, when you have more than one animal showing up, how do you determine which one is the main totem animal, and what would the other two be?
Well, from my experience personally, you know, it would have been the one in the center, you know, of one or two or three. It'll be predominant, and your focus will be, you know, on that, and you'll know that, you know, that is the primary totem, and the other animal, whether it be bird, mammal, whatever, you know, will be, you know, will draw less of your attention to it. So you just have to trust yourself and, you know, ask, you know, questions, but let your waking mind, you know, take a back seat, because if you get into your mental mode, then, you know, one, meditation will start to you know, dissolve, because, you know, it's not designed to be in your waking state. It's will be putting you into the alpha state, and that's where, you know, all the magic of meditation comes from.
Okay. So I guess we can ask everybody to just close their eyes and put their feet flat on the floor and hands on their lap, and you can start the meditation.
Okay. I also recommend you to be in a spot where the phone will not ring and disturb you, and anyone will come in and interrupt you. And you can either sit or lay down, whichever is easiest for you, but make sure your back is straight so that the blood can flow freely up your spine. Close your eyes and breathe deeply. Then begin to perform a progressive relaxation. Focus on each part of your body, sending warm, soothing sensations through it. Begin at your feet and work your way to the top of your head. Take your time with this. The more relaxed you are, the more effective the exercise will be. Don't worry if your mind wanders. Just bring it back to where you left off and continue. Then simply imagine the scenes that follow. As you relax, you find yourself growing lighter and lighter. The surroundings seem to fade, and you are wrapped in the warm, dark cloak of your own energy and mind. It is safe, warm, and comfortable. In your mind's eye, you begin to see soft light, and slowly the view opens. You find yourself at the edge of a crystalline pool of water. The sky above is blue, and there is a soft haze on the distant horizon. Above you, the sun and the moon can be seen together in the sky. You are not sure if it is dusk or dawn, but you know it is one of the most powerful between times, a time in which the thinning of the veils between the physical and the spiritual realms are happening. To your right, at the end of the pool, is a waterfall. The spray from it is cool and misty, and where it touches the pool, water ripples outward, distorting all reflections. It gives the area a surreal appearance. You look about you in the green grass and the distant trees, all is silent. It is as if nature is in a state of quiet anticipation. You look back to the waterfall, and you notice a dark area behind it. You move toward it, and as you stand close to the waterfall, you see a cave half covered and half concealed behind it. You step carefully behind the waters and into the muted darkness of the inner cave. You are surprised, for it is illuminated with soft torches. The light giving off from them gives the open chamber a warmth. Somehow it looks familiar, and it makes you feel as if you were expected to the back of that chamber. Is a tunnel that is also lit with torches. You glance over your shoulder to the area beyond the waterfall and then walk further into the cave. It is warm and it's comfortable as it first appeared. And as you step further in toward the back of the tunnel, you feel a slight giddiness and a soft childlike laugh slips out. For the first time in a long time, you feel like a child about to open and explore wondrous treasures of the world. You step from the chamber into the path of the tunnel and begin to follow it slowly. It is well lit and you are not at all uncomfortable. You reach out and touch the walls with your hands and you are surprised at their warmth. It is as if you could feel the lifeblood of the earth itself flowing through its walls. As you move further along the tunnel widens and grows taller. The torches are fewer and more distant, but you notice that it seems to be getting lighter still. Then you pass a couple of torches that are not even lit. You stop and touch them just to confirm that they have not been recently gone out. And then as you look ahead, you see the reason. The tunnel has widened so greatly that the sun is able to penetrate almost 50 yards back. You see beyond the end of the tunnel, there is a distant river and lush green grass. The sunlight sparkles off of it as with the morning dew on a summer's day. Across the field is the edge of a rich, deep green forest. You pause only a moment, and then you run the last 50 yards and burst from the tunnel into the warm sunlight of this beautiful meadow. The sun is warm upon your face and the grass soft beneath your feet. Your nose is teased with the fragrance of honey and spring wildflowers. The air is sweet, and you tilt your head back and stretch your arms wide. You spin and swirl and laugh at the beauty and lightness of this meadow. Next to the river is a large ancient oak. Surrounding it is the greenest and most lush grass you have ever seen. You run to it and sit down beneath it. You stretch out and roll in the softness, and you inhale its sweet. Then you sit up. Next to the tree is a stone shaped as if it is carved into a chair. You sit down upon it, and as you do, you will find that it fits your form perfectly. It makes you giggle with wonder. You breathe deeply, and from the chair, you look about you. It is quiet and peaceful, and you know that this meadow is a place where wildlife must surely come. And for a moment, you may envy the animals and the birds for having such a place of beauty. You sit upon the stone chair and you enjoy the beauty of nature. It is as if you, with each breath, you become more and more a part of it, and it becomes more and more a part of you. Then suddenly your breath catches. You see a movement out of the corner of your eye at the edge of the forest. You hold your breath. Maybe we'll get to see some wildlife. Then from among the trees comes movement. It may soar above you or it may step out into the meadow. You sit still watching as an animal appears in your vision. Don't force it. Allow it to show itself to you. And as it does, its eyes seek you out and hold your gaze. Never have you seen anything so wonderful, so unique. Such animals have always seemed so wild and out of touch. There is no fear as it moves closer, only recognition and wonder. Surely this must be a dream. Then, as if in response to your thoughts, it makes a sound, a movement, a gesture, and you fix your eyes upon it. In that moment, you begin to understand. You catch a glimpse of memories of how it may have helped you in the past. You now know why you have always been fascinated with it, and then it begins to move toward the tunnel. It pauses and turns to look back at you, as if telling you it is time to go on. You stand and begin to follow it. As you approach the mouth of the tunnel, it waits. It is so close With a few steps, you could touch it. Carefully, gently, you extend your hand out to it. But before your hand gets close enough to actually touch it, it jumps and is heading back to the edge of the forest. It pauses, looking back at you once more, and then disappears into the green. You understand. It will take time to develop a relationship. There is much you have to learn from each other. Until then, you must be patient. You smile a sweet sadness and then move back into the tunnel, following it back to the waterfall. As you step from the cave and behind the waterfall, you look into the crystal pool. You see the reflection rippling, and then behind your reflection, you see the form of your animal totem. You catch your breath and you laugh, thanking it for opening to you. As you do so, its image disappears and the scene around you begins to fade. You're again in the warm darkness of your own mind. The image of your totem is strong within you as you breathe deeply and allow yourself to come back to your surroundings. Take a moment and gradually come back to place and time where you started. And count to 10. And then you will be fully awake and alert. 1, 2, 3, slowly coming back. 4, 5, 6, getting more conscious now. 7, 8, 9, almost back to the present. 10, you're wide awake in perfect health and happiness, feeling better than before. And this concludes the meditation to find your totem.
That was very nice. I enjoyed that. I did not remember all the detail of the meditation. I remembered some of it. However, it's quite beautiful. And you kind of don't want to leave the cave. You just want to stay out there in the forest.
Yeah. And when you're not on the radio show, shorts, if you have someone, you know, read it to you from the book, they can, if you'd like to take it slower, you know, they and have more pauses, you know, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
One
of the other things I'd like to do is read it and record it, and then you can listen to it as slow as you like. So that's another way you could do it.
Yeah. So the first time that I did it, there was no one to read it to me, so I just read it, and I sort of defocused my vision whenever I could, which, you know, lets you go into the meditative state a little easier.
Right.
And, I was able to get through the meditation.
Right.
But it's much nicer to be able to relax and hear someone read it to you, by far.
Now, does your totem, I guess the question would be, if you continue to do it, does your totem animal change with time? Or can it change with time? Or would it be the same always?
Well, it's possible that your primary totem can change and over a period of time. I haven't experienced that one personally. But I have had the secondary totems change, you know, in relation to, you know, how my life has changed over the years.
Interesting. The reason I asked that question is because my totem animal again was the same one, and it was the bald eagle.
But again, I've had different secondary totems from mammals, fish, insects, birds. They all have a purpose and they have a meaning. Some will be in the book, straightforward, and others you'll just have to, ask, go into a quiet place and, ask, what does this mean? And maybe you'll hear your inner voice, give you some guidance. Or other times, it'll come in the dream time. And if you ask often enough and be patient, you'll get the answer.
Right. Well, those are very good points because that's something that the listeners need to know in order, if they didn't automatically get one, then to wait for a dream and ask when you go to bed, make the intent to remember your totem animal, or try to remember the meditation and go over it before you go to sleep as well. That would be another way to maybe recall. But the fact that it is possible to have your totem, especially your secondary and tertiary totems, change, that's also very interesting. So it's good to know. All right. So if now it's a good time for our listeners to give us a call, we have a few minutes, about 10 minutes to go, and we can continue along the lines. For example, using either your totem animal, would you like to share with us what the book says about yours or mine, Charlie? Yours is the ball, owl, correct? The white owl?
Well, there's quite a few owls, and mine just happens to be the great horned owl.
Oh, okay. Great horn. Now, based on the book, does it matter which owl it is, or it does not matter?
Well, in the book itself, it has, a variety of owls, and it starts off with the keynote, is the mystery of magic, omens, silent wisdom, and vision in the night. And the cycle of power is nocturnal and year-round. And then it just, actually, this, since it has pictures of, several owls, it goes for three or four pages. And it also says that there's a daytime counterpart to the owls. And it just so happens that great horned owls, daytime counterpart is the red-tailed hawk. So we have red-tailed hawks in my area, and when one flies by or has perched in a tree outside of my yard in unusual circumstances, because they're usually flying high and not in suburban areas, residential areas, perching, that to me is a good sign that my daytime counterpart has come by to visit. Or just, remind me that it's about time to reread, some parts of what the red-tailed hawk or, the primary totem, for me, which is the owl, is about. And, that's how I identify, with the, the animal, world, and signs all the time.
Okay. What would you be willing to read the white, the eagle, the bald eagle? And I guess I'm trying to understand how the counterpart works in relation to the, is it like your opposite, the yin and yang?
Well, I would say so, and I don't know if it lists, all, a date of course, the eagle's daytime, whether it lists the counterpart, for nocturnal or not. Let me get to the eagle here. So I've had this book in my lap here.
Yeah, that's very interesting to understand how the, your totem animal works and works basically for you. And then at the same time, understanding the relationship between your counterpart and how that works, because, for example, yours is nocturnal. The hawk, the red-tailed hawk would be the counterpart, which is a day bird. So that would be interesting to understand the contrast between the two and the differences.
Okay, let me know. Has a mm-hmm. three-page description.
Wow.
Related to it.
We may not have that much time, but if you can read a little bit of it, touch upon the most interesting aspects or the important aspects of it would be good.
Yeah. Well, I want to start with the first and the last paragraph, and then we can catch up in between.
Okay, that's fair.
The keynote for the eagle is illumination of spirit, healing, and creation. The cycle of power, all seasons, enduring daylight. Okay, and the first paragraph is, the eagle is one of the greatest and most admired birds of prey. It has served as inspiration to many societies. Their ability to soar and hunt amazes and thrills those who witness it. Eagles, in fact, are so good at getting food, they spend very little time hunting. The fact that they are good at feeding themselves from the land and still soar to great heights in the sky reflects much about the hidden significance of an eagle who comes as a totem. They will teach a balance of being in of the earth, but not in it. And swinging back to the last paragraph. Actually a paragraph in a little bit. Eagles are symbols of great power, a power that goes beyond their actual size. The average bald eagle weighs between 8 and 10 pounds, about 2 pounds less than an average house cat. Mm. To align oneself with eagle medicine is to take on the responsibility and the power of becoming so much more than you know now that you now appear to be. From a karmic aspect, it reflects that the events will now fly faster and the repercussions for everything you think, do, or say, or fail to think, do, or say, positive and negative, will be both stronger and quicker. To accept the ego as a totem is to accept that dual growth. But only through doing so do you learn how to move between worlds, touch all life with healing, and become the mediator and the bearer of new creative force within the world.
So wow, it sounds powerful and challenging at the same time.
Yes, there is a challenge, you know, behind each totem,
yes,
animal, and secondary ones as well. And it's very convenient to have, you know, a baseline message, and then of course you can always, you know, get additional messages or insight, you know, just by, you know, thinking about it, meditating, you know, on the aspects of, you know, a particular animal that's come into,
yes,
your life. They will do it, you know, more frequently once you become open to it, just like, you know, anything else that you're receptive to. And the gates start to open and you receive more insight.
What would be the counterpart to the eagle, by the way? Or does that mention it in there?
If it is, it's, you know, buried in the three pages and not.
Okay. Okay, that's fine.
They made it easy with the owls. They had, you know, a little line down one side of, you know, the particular owls, and then on the other side, the daytime counterpart.
Yeah. Well, we might have 1 minute more for another paragraph, and that's about it, and we can close.
All right, well, one that catches my eyes on the second page says, the Thunderbird to the Native Americans is most often depicted in the form of an eagle. This was the great spirit who controlled lightning and rain, punishment and reward. To the Plains Cree, all eagles had mystical power, and these powers could be shared by anyone who possessed part of the bird. To the Pueblo Indians, the eagle was a bird of the sky with the ability to spiral upward until it passed through a hole in the sky to the home of the sun. It was associated with all the energies of the sun, physical and spiritual. Pueblo Indians honored six directions, north, south, east, west, zenith above, and nadir below. The eagle was a symbol of the zenith because of its ability to soar to great heights. From these heights, it could survey all four directions. They became symbols of greater sight and perception.
Well, I guess I have a lot of work to do. Yeah. I think one day somehow I will receive an eagle's feather, because you said that there are certain abilities by possessing one of the animal's parts. So, I understand that the Indian feathers or eagle's feathers are reserved specifically for shamans and in spiritual rituals by Native Americans. However, because this is my totem, I have a feeling that it is intended, if I am to, you know, to perform my ultimate goal and purpose in life. Anyway, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I enjoyed it so much, and I hope that our listeners also got a bunch of benefit from this, and look forward to having you on more shows in the future. And have a wonderful week. And this is for all our audience. Have a wonderful week. And listen to us again on Monday for New Consciousness, New World. This is what we're striving for. This is our goal, to help humanity transcend the fourth dimension and ascend into the fifth dimension, which is our intention and our goal in our next evolutionary step. So, wonderful weekend or week to everyone. And until our next show, New Consciousness, New World, this is Esperantha Ray, your host, wishing you a peaceful, balanced week.
Thank you and good night.
Good night.